Deutsche Bank will no longer do business with President Donald Trump, a move that will cut off his business from a major source of loans that once helped fund his golf courses and hotels. After a series of bankruptcies in the 1990s, it was the only bank willing to give Trump money. The Trump Organization owes the bank about $340 million in outstanding loans. The move is the latest example of corporate backlash against the president after his supporters vandalized the Capitol in a brazen assault that left 5 people dead. On Monday, Signature Bank said it started closing Trump's personal accounts and called for the president to resign. The U.S. bank also said it, quote, will not do business in the future with any members of Congress who voted to disregard the Electoral College. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 48 degrees and sunny. In New York City, it's 43 degrees, but also blue skies. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Amara Evering. Please stay safe.
The time now is almost 1 minute past 3 p.m. Stay tuned for Black Star News with Milton Alamadi. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
Sisters and brothers, welcome to Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM radio. I am your host, Milton Alamadi. We have a fabulous show today. Our guest is Dr. Wilma Leon, producer and host of nationally broadcast call-in talk radio program, Inside the Issues on Sirius XM. He's also a professor and he is a book author. I have him on today because I wanted to discuss with him an article he wrote that we published today on blackstarnews.com. And the headline we gave it is American Hypocrisy, Condemning U.S. Coup Attempt While Overthrowing Governments Overseas. Welcome to Black Star News Show.
Brother Milton, thank you very much for the invitation. Thank you so much for that introduction.
Excellent. All right. So before we get into the hypocrisy aspect, why don't we discuss the incident itself? Mm-hmm. The attack on the Capitol, January 6th, by domestic terrorists following direct incitement by the president, President Trump, and others, including his son, Donald Trump Jr., Rudy Giuliani, his lawyer, the former mayor of New York, who declared trial by combat. And this is the same Giuliani, African-American citizens are very familiar with, including that incident, infamous incident, when he joined a drunken mob of European police officers who besieged City Hall during the administration of the late Mayor David Dinkins. So why don't we focus on the incident itself first? First of all, were you surprised?
I was very surprised that the incident escalated from the rally. The group turned into a mob, and the mob turned into an insurrectionist conflagration, as I call it in my piece. I never thought that I would see the day that the U.S. Capitol would be stormed and breached by anything other than a military with air cover, because that is one of the most secure buildings in the world. And without this being an inside job, I didn't think it, and I worked there for a summer. So I've got some insight into, you know, how it operates inside the building. I never thought that citizens would be able to breach that fortified building.
Okay, so essentially you're saying this could not have happened without some inside collaboration.
Oh, absolutely not. No. And there's video to that effect. There's video showing Capitol Police or other members of law enforcement removing barriers, allowing the mob to go up the steps. You know, there are snipers on roofs. No shots were fired. There are pictures of Capitol Hill policemen taking pictures with protesters. There are a number of things that to me are just proof positive that the normal forces and the normal response was told to stand down.
So how disturbing is this?
Oh, it's incredibly disturbing because it fits into the broader narrative of collusion or that we've known for a while that there are members of our police forces, there are members of our fire departments and other emergency response operations in the military that have been infiltrated. Well, some will say infiltrated by white supremacists or white nationalists. I wouldn't say infiltrated because that gives the indication that it's new and it's not, because we know, for example, that police forces in many cities in this country started as slave catching operations.
That's right.
So to say infiltrated to me is it has a connotation that gives the indication that it hasn't always been this way.
Absolutely. I agree with you. It gives the impression that there are normally functioning institutions that have been compromised
by subversives. Right.
Okay, very good. But now, if that is the case, what are we to think about the upcoming inauguration then? Do you have concerns? And what concerns do you have?
Well, I have concerns, but to a certain degree, the concerns have been mitigated because the covers have been pulled off of this thing. And I do expect some of the same people who showed up on the 6th to show up again on the 20th. I don't expect them to just go quietly into the night. But there will be a much stronger presence from the National Guard, from the Washington, D.C. police and the Capitol Hill police and so many other entities that I can't see a situation such as we saw on Wednesday happening again. The fences are already being put up and so on and so forth. But so I don't see that happening, but I could definitely see unrest in the streets.
Okay, now, obviously, this is not happening by accident. We are living in a certain environment right now, thanks primarily very much to the current occupant of the White House.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about that. What has this individual done to this country, and what will it take to reverse or to diminish some of the destructive elements that he's introduced into the mainstream?
Well, before I get to that, let me make one more point, and that is there was a lot of chatter on the internet, both on the standard web and on the dark web. So it's not that the members of law enforcement were caught off guard. They knew this was coming, and they knew that this was coming for months. So that's another element to the point that they stood down. And, you know, you've seen the pictures of Black Lives Matter, the Black Lives Matter protests and the show of force that was very evident in response to those peaceful protesters.
Absolutely.
So that's now to answer your question, you know, part of the answer for me is I hate to attribute this to Donald Trump.
Thank you. I understand what you're saying. Go ahead.
Okay. I understand why people do that. But those of us who have any type of understanding of American history understand that this is not Donald Trump. This is America.
Yes.
And that all Donald Trump has done is provide the sunshine and the fertile soil and the fertilizer for all of this to bloom in the light of day. He has created the environment so that nationalists and white supremacists and just flat out racists feel very comfortable. They feel empowered and they feel emboldened in their racism and in their violence. And Charlottesville is a perfect example of that. And Trump's response to the heinous acts in Charlottesville is another example. So this isn't Trump. This is America.
Yes.
And it's interesting, you know, a lot of well-meaning white liberals are now being shown very clearly what we have known since we arrived on these shores in 1619.
And that they did possibly know as well, but had never been compelled to talk about it because Trump had not managed to flush all these issues out into the public view.
And to that point, yes. And I would say there's a difference between knowledge and realization. And so a lot of them, yes, knew this, but now, for example, seeing the execution of George Floyd, it has come to a level of realization that for many of them up until that point, they couldn't really comprehend.
All right. So is it perversely in some sort of way, is it actually not good that Trump has now brought all these issues into the public view so that we can now have the opportunity to have this conversation, which very often people don't want to get involved in this country?
Yeah, I think it's very good. I equate it to Dr. King and the SCLC and the SNCC and the civil rights movement, how Dr. King understood the power of television long before a lot of other people did. And his, you know, putting children out front, his basically, you know, we sacrificed with the dogs and the hoses. All of that was put on national television. And the primarily white America, particularly white America in the North, could see firsthand what Jim Crow and what racism in America was really all about. And so I equate what we're seeing now through as a result of the Trump administration as another example of that noxious, ugly period in American history.
Listeners, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM radio. I'm your host, Milton Alimadi. Our guest is Dr. Wilma Leon. He's a professor, producer, and host of nationally broadcast call-in talk radio program, Inside the Issues on Sirius XM. Listeners, as you know, we can only bring these kind of discussions to you with your support. This is a commercial-free, listener-supported station, and that's how we're able to do it. So I remind you, please pick up the phone. Dial 516-620-3602. Any contribution you make will be put to good use in supporting these types of programming. I also ask you to go to give and the number 2, WBAI.org, in which case you can adopt one of these programs as your favorite show and become a buddy. The money is taken out of your credit or debit card on a monthly basis. Now back to our guest. All right. Would you like to say, make any further observation on this insurrection before we get into discussing the hypocrisy aspect?
Not, well, just to, I'm glad you used the word insurrection, because this was not a riot. This was an insurrection. This was a treasonous attack on the Capitol. And it was very clear, and it was stated by those involved what their intention was. Their intention was to stop the government from engaging in its constitutionally mandated function of confirming the electoral vote count from November 3rd. And there are also reports coming out of that event. There were some people that were looking for Vice President Pence. They wanted to hang Pence as a traitor. So
go ahead.
Well, so and there were also those that were looking for Nancy Pelosi. You had some folks in there that were truly on a mission of murder.
Which actually is a question I also wanted to ask you. Had they actually, and obviously we're glad it never happened, had they managed to kill 5 to 10 members of Congress, do you think we would even be debating whether Trump should remain as president at this point? Or do you think he would have been gone by now?
I think we'd still be debating it. I think the size of his support would wane, but I do believe that there are and always will be apologists for him. And not only him, but Ted Cruz and some of those other enablers. So I think we would still be having the conversation.
Interesting.
But I don't think that the pushback would be as great.
What about the ban on Twitter? What are your views on that?
I take issue with the ban on Twitter because Twitter is, and Facebook, social media has become the public square. And so from a free speech perspective, I take issue with the Twitter ban, because when you start sanctioning and banning that type of speech, then you started down the slippery slope of banning the conversation that you and I are having.
What if they said, we're going to ban him until after the swearing in of Joe Biden? Do you think that would have made a difference, or you would still have the same view on that?
I would be more inclined to understand that rationale, mm-hmm. because as president, there is still a lot of damage that he can do. Mm-hmm. So putting the parameters around that you just articulated, I would be better able to accept that as opposed to just banning him outright. Again, because also there's a distinction between the social media platforms and journalists. Mm-hmm. There's a difference, even though journalists do use those platforms.
Right.
There's a difference between those platforms. They're not publishers. They're not the formal and traditional mechanisms that even Black Star News uses. You're a journalist,
right?
And you have standards. You have review, and so you are held to a different standard than a bulletin board like mm-hmm. Facebook or Twitter,
right?
So and also, they don't follow their own guidelines.
Mm.
So explain. So I'm real big on free speech. I'm real big on the public square.
Right.
And I'm real big on the First Amendment.
Okay, very good. Understood. All right. So why don't we deal with the hypocrisy that you pointed out in this column that we published today? You spoke about, yes, of course, this incident, reprehensible, mm-hmm. obnoxious, what have you. But at the same time, we have to look at the perspective and look at the history, the U.S. involvement in undermining, overthrowing governments, duly elected governments overseas, and even continuing to, as we speak, undermine the government in Venezuela, for example. And then you gave the examples. You gave the examples of Mossadegh in Iran, Arbenz in Guatemala, and many other examples. And of course, we recall the brutal murder of Patrice Lumumba in the Congo in 1961, the overthrow of Kwame Nkrumah in Ghana in 1966, also with CIA involvement. So I want you to talk about how you contextualize this, and you pointed out the hypocrisy.
Well, to your point, I opened the piece by making it very clear that what transpired on Wednesday was heinous, was illegal, it was treasonous, it was seditious, it was heinous. It never should have happened. It's insurrection, it's unconstitutional, and those that were involved should be rounded up and should be charged, convicted, and dealt with accordingly.
Right.
But if you're outraged at what took place at the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday, then you should be just as outraged as what the United States government has done and continues to do in other capitals in our name as Americans and with our tax dollars.
Correct.
So we overthrew, you know, the so-called Islamic terrorism that the United States allegedly is fighting. Well, the United States created the environment for that to develop when we overthrew the democratically elected prime minister of Iran in 1953, Mohammad Mossadegh.
Absolutely.
And we overthrew him simply because the Britain wanted cheaper access to Iranian oil.
That's right.
When we talk about Arbenz, basically on behalf of the United Fruit Company.
Correct.
Arbenz had introduced a minimum wage and the vote. He brought democracy to Guatemala, and the United Fruit Company did not want to pay that minimum wage, and they also did not want to pay the additional taxes, as Arbenz had revalued fallow agricultural land.
Right.
And so the United Fruit Company appealed to Dwight Eisenhower, and we overthrew President Arbenz in Guatemala. We've done it in Bolivia. We've done it all over the world.
Right. And in Guatemala, wasn't it either the Secretary of State or the CIA director who was a shareholder?
Yes.
Or had some shares in United Fruit?
Well, I think the Secretary of State at the time and the head of the CIA were brothers, the Dulles brothers.
Right.
And so, yes, yes, one or both of them were also shareholders in the United Fruit Company. We can look at the way that the United States got a hold of the islands of Hawaii, which were known as the Sandwich Islands.
Mm.
And because a group of previous religious, I forget the term to use, they wanted to import sugar from Hawaii. From the Sandwich Islands, but importing foreign sugar, they had a tax on the importation of foreign sugar.
Right.
So they figured if they took over the island, they could avoid paying the importation tax because it would no longer be foreign sugar.
Right.
So they sent the Navy to Hawaii and they overtook. The United U.S. history is replete, not only in terms of history from the 40s and the 50s, but in terms of what we're doing right now.
Absolutely.
In Bolivia.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't stand, you know, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell and all of these members of Congress that want to stand there and wring their hands with disgust at the coup d'etat that was attempted on Wednesday. They have voted for Elizabeth Warren. She came out verbally supporting the coup in Bolivia. Nancy Pelosi came out verbally and supported the coup, the attempted coup in Venezuela.
Right.
So what's good for the goose is good for the gander. You cannot be opposed to a coup on American soil,
right,
and finance and foment and encourage coups in the Ukraine, working with neo-Nazis as president-elect Joe Biden did as vice president of this country,
right,
backed the coup in the Ukraine.
How can we get this conversation to the broader public? That is a challenge, because that's where I point this out, right?
Therein lies the problem. You will not hear this conversation on MSNBC. You will not hear this conversation on CNN. In fact, that's one of the things that got me to write the piece, was I was listening to, I can't remember his name, one of the guys on CNN, and along with this guy that writes for the New York Times, and they were talking about, I'm going to use a term that Americans are going to be uncomfortable with, and the word is coup d'etat.
Oh, that sounds like Jake Tapper. If I recognize
it was Blitz. No, it was the guy who's the son of Gloria Vanderbilt.
Anderson Cooper.
It was Anderson Cooper and Tom Friedman. Okay. And we're going to use the word coup d'etat. Ooh, this was a coup d'etat.
We just discovered this word.
Exactly. And so I'm waiting, as I'm watching the interview, I'm waiting for Anderson Cooper to say, but you do realize that the United States has been and continues to be involved in coups all over the world. And they never said it. So I said, well, I'm going to say it. So, and we haven't talked about Yemen, which is one of the worst, which the United Nations has declared the worst man-made human catastrophe in the world, in the history of the world.
It is just horrific. And you know what?
Greenlit by Barack Obama.
I'm glad you brought that up, because some of those images are so horrific of the starving, emaciated people that if they showed that consistently on the major network,
absolutely,
I think something would be done. So I know without diverting away, talk a little bit about that as well.
Oh my God. So to put it very simply, when the Obama administration was negotiating the JCPOA, the nuclear deal with Iran, Saudi Arabia didn't want to get on board. So in order to, and it really wouldn't have worked if the Saudis had not been involved. Right. So in order to get the Saudis on board, the Obama administration agreed to work with the Saudis as they launched their war against Yemen. And so the United States has provided logistical support, targeting support, and refueling support of the Saudi airstrikes against the people of Yemen. And it is just genocide.
It is
what it is. And there's absolutely no reason for this to be taking place. But the United States, from Obama now to Trump, I think they're in their seventh year of just basically trying to blow these people off the map.
It's crazy.
And it is insane. And really the disgusting thing about it is the United States could stop it in one day.
Absolutely.
One day. If Joe Biden on the 21st of January, a day after he gets sworn in, were to call Crown Prince Bonesaw and tell him, we're done. It's that's over. It would end.
Yes. And that's the sad thing. And the same thing applies to Venezuela. The same thing applies to all these other arenas as well. Listen, we are running out of time. Mm-hmm. I want you to make any final observations. Maybe there's some critical issues that none of the major networks are talking about that you want to get out so people can start thinking about or just to know.
Well, honestly, what I think people need to do as President-elect Biden is telling us who he's planning to put on his cabinet. You can't be fooled because it's Joe Biden. You can't sit back and think just because it's not Donald Trump that it's all good in the neighborhood, because it's not. Hmm. When you look at Avril Haines and you look at all of these warmongers and war criminals that Joe Biden is putting on his cabinet, folks, it's going to be more of the same.
Right.
It's just going to be a little bit nicer.
Right.
Joe Biden's a little bit slicker, but the policies are going to be just as horrific. You have to do your homework.
Yes.
You have to do some reading. And when you do, you'll find out that it's not going to get any better.
All right. Very good. Well, we'll have you on again to continue this conversation. But if people want to get in touch with you on social media or any contact you'd like to provide to the listeners,
the simplest way to do is go to my webpage, go to WilmerLeon.com, WilmerLeon.com. And everything is there. Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff is on the at Wilmer. And you can get a copy of the book, Politics, Another Perspective, WilmerLeon.com.
Stay strong, brother.
You too, Milton. With you, I have to. Thank you.
Happy New Year again.
Same to you, my brother.
This is a message to the government. Expressing what's exactly on the people's mind. Na buli chitu malaka dembe yafe Uganda etambula etamavika Chitu seno kutweta miegwanga yafe Bulimba mutufuga bubinyo na mwe Kalite tuganye mwana na munsiko na ye Kumana kwe wasanga ngata nazari wakati na ye yazala nata Chino mchingambire muze ya bamu tukako Saba anebaze ibane bamu kambeko Ene songa chamu nyojale meteko kati egwanga lionali enyamide Bagambe ya linga demokulase mamu buruka kati ya fuka na ipokulise Bagambe ya li fundamento chenji majizala wakati mujifu eno chenji Bagamba jensongeza balwanya kati mazibuka kona mwemu kola bilie biabari Makusabanti constitution yawe doji kwa takoku mamu musika desu biliawe I say we are fighting for freedom.
Greetings, sisters and brothers. Welcome to the second half hour of Black Star News Show on 99.5 FM radio, WBAI, New York. That song you just heard is called We Are Fighting for Freedom, and it's by Bobby Wine. That's actually his popular name. His given name is Robert Kyagulanyi. He is a young member of parliament in Uganda, and he's running for the presidency. The election is January the 14th, and there are two other candidates in addition to Bobby Wine, Patrick Amuriat and Mugisha Muntu. And all of them are running against the country's dictator of 35 years, General Yoweri Museveni. And my guest to discuss this in the next half hour is Richard Martin Byakuleka. He is Ugandan-born. He is an international development consultant, and he's an activist fighting for and promoting democracy and human rights protection in Uganda. Welcome to Black Star News Show.
Thank you so much, Milton.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, my brother.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, so Uganda, elections on Thursday. Uganda gets $1 billion every year from the United States, courtesy U.S. taxpayers' money. It gets financial support. It gets military support. Is Uganda a democracy? What does the United States get in return for the $1 billion?
I'll tell you something for our listeners. In the beginning, when Museveni came into power, there was a lot of pressure from Western democracies upon African countries to democratize. Now, democracy or democratization as a process has three stages. It has the protest stage, the liberalization stage, and the consolidation stage. Consolidation is when the entire society learns how to live by law. And when you have everything settled, all conflicts settled by rule of law. There are very few countries in Africa that have democratic consolidation. Actually, when we are specifically, strictly speaking now, it's Ghana and South Africa. Kenya is probably going to get there. Now, the rest of countries, including Uganda, by the time Museveni came, they did what we call liberalization. So Museveni was in the liberalization stage of democracy, and he carried on well with all the pressure from Western countries. However, when the obtaining international political paradigm faded out, that paradigm by that time was what we call the neoliberal internationalism. Once it faded, it clearly faded around the year 2001 when the terrorists hit the Twin Towers in New York. What we got after that was a different international order, an international order that was dominated by the need to rein in terrorists everywhere in the world. Around that time, Western democracies chose Museveni to become their partner in eradicating terrorism in Eastern Africa. It is around that time that the political liberalization stage of democracy in Uganda started to go backwards into protest and near dictatorship. So when you ask me, is Uganda a democracy? Uganda has virtually not been a democracy since the year 2001 until now.
So the second part of the question then is Museveni. So the answer, you're answering it indirectly, that Museveni gets the $1 billion a year because he's, quote unquote, a partner with the West in the, the so-called fight against terrorism. Is this really a partnership, though? I mean, does not partnership imply some equals, or is this the foot soldier on behalf of the Western interest?
Is you, you have put it more correctly, a foot soldier. And then I'll get you back one step to the political philosophy of that also, the contemporary international political philosophy of that. You are aware that by the time the terrorists hit the Twin Towers, there had been an obtaining political paradigm here in the United States and most of Western Europe, whereby the voters in those countries were against their governments taking soldiers, homeborn soldiers abroad to fight.
Right.
We called it an antipathy towards putting boots on the ground.
Right.
So that is when the United States and other Western democracies chose to ally with strongmen.
Right.
Strongmen. Now, dictators were no longer called dictators, but they were called an endearing term, strongmen.
Yes. So they had to sanitize the language.
They had to sanitize the language, call them strongmen. Okay, so the dear strongmen to fight for Western democracies included people like Yoweri Museveni of Uganda, very prominently. And I'll tell you, all that aid coming from Western democracies to Museveni emboldened Museveni to regress from liberalization backwards to dictatorship.
So that leads me to the next question then. So it is not a coincidence that he has been there for 35 years. And in the process, he did something to the Constitution, correct?
Absolutely. And I tell you, my brother.
And tell listeners after, that, because many listeners are not familiar with the politics in Uganda. What did he do?
You see, after everything, all those shenanigans he did, as I'm going to tell you, started after the partnership with Western democracies. Once he became the strong man fighting their wars in Somalia, a very loved strong man who they carried in their laps, giving him lots of money. All he did was to act like a spoiled kid. Went back home, got the constitution, changed and removed term limits. Because initially we had decreed that every president of Uganda shall rule for a maximum of 2 terms each of 5 years. The spoiled kid went back home and removed these from the Constitution because his backers in Western Europe could do nothing to him. The second thing he did was to remove age limits so that he could stay on even after he was 75, because initially we had decreed that no president of Uganda would rule beyond his 75th birthday. However, the strong man, a dear friend of America and Western Europe, loaded with dollars from Washington and other European cities, now had the boldness to remove age limits. In fact, I'll tell you one glaring fact. The day he removed the age limits, all protesting opposition parliamentarians were physically thrown out by his security when they were attempting to filibuster in the Ugandan parliament. These were forcibly removed, beaten. Some of them, like Honorable Nambooze, had her back broken. They were thrown out. They even attempted to fight. When some of the opposition members of parliament attempted to fight, it was like a movie, you know. And of course, they were subdued by the much stronger security. And what happened in all Western capitals, they showed the fracas in the Ugandan parliament as the comedy skit.
Yes, I remember.
Never in the main news. It was reported as a comedy skit.
Yes, everybody was just,
yeah.
And because, then I think the part of the reason for that was that it was misrepresented as a rowdy parliament where members of parliament are just fighting each other. When in fact, as you just pointed out, these were state security agency inside the parliament dressed in suits to look as if they were members of parliament as well. And they were beating up people that were opposing the removal of the age limit, correct?
That is very true. But then for us here, activists in the United States and elsewhere, we were incessantly informing people here, including representatives in the Senate and everywhere, that, hey, we are having our democracy at home badly abused by Museveni. But nobody cared. They never lent us a ear because the strong man was their partner.
Okay, so now that leads me to the other question then. The elections are on Thursday. And, you know, I've been following some too, and I've followed some of the information you post on your social media space as well. I see you follow it very closely. Hundreds of people have been arrested, young people in particular. And I understand these are supporters of the opposition parties, particularly candidate Bobi Wine, who is 38 years old. And of course, he has this huge following since the country is 80% under the age of 35. And also, it's been quite bloody. And the most bloody incident, of course, was November 18, when the government itself admits that 54 people were killed. But other reports say it was well over 100. And this was after Bobi Wine had been arrested and protests erupted nationally. And security forces fired live bullets into these unarmed civilian demonstrators. So, and most recently, I think it was yesterday or the day before, the chief of the police, Martin Ochola, when asked about the police beating up journalists, shooting at journalists, wounding journalists, and he held a press conference and told journalists that we're actually doing this for your own good, because when we tell you not to go to dangerous areas, you keep going there. So by beating you, we're actually preserving your life. So I bring all this up to ask you, this does not really sound to me like an election period. It sounds more like a government engaging in warfare against its own citizens. Can we really say Thursday is going to be an election? I want to see your response to that.
You see, first of all, we must understand what do elections mean in Uganda. Elections in Uganda are meant for Museveni's partners, all Uganda's development partners and friends. because Museveni wants to show them, and they have also asked him that, hey, if you are going to deal with us, you should be an elected leader. Now, that's all we need, you know. They ask him for minimum condition. You have to be an elected leader. So these elections in Uganda are arranged so that they can present Museveni as an elected leader, sanitize and legitimize his relationship between him and his Western democracies' friends. So the rest of Ugandans have nothing to do with those elections. That is why they are being clobbered and beaten like thieves, because they have no business in this. This is a situation between Museveni and the outside world. This is not a matter of Bobi Wine and all those other people taking advantage of elections to dethrone Museveni. No, Museveni has already clearly stated that a mere piece of paper cannot take him from power. Then you ask yourself, then why is he arranging an event where pieces of paper are going to be thrown around? They are for his foreign friends' purpose, not you, dear Ugandans. So if you, dear Ugandans, want to take advantage of this, you shall be thoroughly manhandled.
Well, I'm going to ask you what comes next. But first of all, for listeners that are just joining us, this is Black Star News Show on WBAA 99.5 FM radio. And I'm your host, Milton Alimadi. And our guest today is Richard Martin Byakuleka. He's an international development consultant, and he's an activist promoting human rights and democratization in Uganda. Listeners, as you know, WBAI is commercial free. And we can bring you these kind of discussions because we get support from listeners such as you. So we just like to remind you, pick up the phone and dial 516-620-3602. You can even do something better. You can go to give and then the number 2, WBAI.org. You can adopt one of our shows as your buddy. Become a buddy of Black Star News Show. And any money that you give will be put to good use. If you do become a buddy, the money will be taken out of your credit or debit card on a monthly basis. Now back to our discussion with Richard Martin Byakuleka. So I ask you that, if these elections are superficial dressing by Museveni to impress the people that give him the $1 billion a year, are all those thousands of young people that have been seeing via social media coming to listen to Bobi Wine and welcoming him? I think in one case, when the police set up a barricade to prevent them from entering a town, people circumvented it by literally swimming through swamps to get to see him. All those people, do they also believe they're engaging in a superficial exercise? Or do they actually intend to vote on Thursday in order to change power in Uganda?
This is a very good question you have asked. This time around, unlike previous elections, the people are out to bust the superficiality of these elections. They have come to bust it. The people want to take their elections back from Museveni. Mm-hmm. Museveni, who has been arranging it like a ritual, 5-year ritual, to impress his backers abroad. Now the people want to hijack the occasion.
Right.
They're saying, we are taking this back and we are using it to dethrone you. And the commander of these people engaged in this process is Bobi Wine. And that is why Museveni is very scared, because this is unusual. Mm. He's been so surprised. Why are people hijacking his process and almost threatening to do so successfully? So Bobi Wine.
In other words, listeners that he's saying, what's wrong with these people? This is meant to be a game, but the people are actually taking it seriously. Is that
exactly
it?
Exactly. Exactly. This is supposed to be my ruse. It's my ruse. I'm doing my place, and now these kids want to take it for the reality that it is actually originally supposed to be. Damn.
They think it's supposed to be true.
Exactly.
So, Biakuleka, let me ask you though.
Yes.
Since the Election Commission is handpicked by General Museveni.
Yes.
When the elections are held on Thursday, do you really imagine this election commission is going to declare a winner who is any person other than General Museveni?
You see, I'll tell you something, brother. This election is very unusual.
Mm.
And a few unusual things are going to take place. Things like we have never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
However, the normal situation is that a handpicked chairman of the Electoral Commission mm-hmm. cannot declare any other candidate the winner apart from Mr. Museveni, General Museveni, because this is how the play is set up.
Mm.
You can't go beyond the rules of the play, of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go beyond. However, because something unusual is going on. The people are hijacking the occasion to enact what it is actually supposed to originally do.
Mm-hmm.
A few things may happen.
Mm-hmm. Give listeners some examples.
For example, you know, there's a very widespread rigging.
Mm.
But we also know that Ugandans have always turned out in very low percentages to vote.
Mm-hmm.
But for about a year now, there has been a get the vote out informal campaign that is very, very serious, unlike anything I've ever seen.
I see.
So people are now going to come in millions to vote, and they may upset the rigging.
So you're saying, listeners, it might be so overwhelming that the rigging may not work on this occasion.
Exactly. Now, if the rigging is overwhelmed, I don't know how the man who announces will go on to announce false things, because he may also be afraid of the people.
I see. Because sometimes if the writing is on the wall, sometimes everybody can see it. Is that it?
Exactly. And another thing is the people are so much into this process this time around, like they have never been.
I see.
So anybody who is planning any shenanigan has to think twice.
I see. Okay. Yes. Biakuleka, we are running out of time. The U.S. has really supported this regime for such a long time, essentially, as you said, because they have been able to rent Museveni's because he does treat the National Army as if it's his personal army. So they've been able to rent the army to do the U.S. bidding in places like Somalia, even in Iraq and other places. But my question to you is, there's a new upcoming administration, as you know, Joe Biden. What message would you have for this upcoming administration as somebody who cares about Uganda and more generally, somebody who cares about Africa?
You see, the good thing with this administration is they have already stressed that they are bringing human rights back to the international agenda.
Okay.
Now, once you get human rights back to the international agenda, then the dictators are going to be at a loss.
Okay.
Because what was happening with the previous administration is that they cared less how you treat the people.
Okay, so that's going to make that difference. Okay, so we've run out of time. I would like you to tell listeners how they can get in touch with you if they would like to continue this conversation with you.
Oh, it's okay. Anybody who wants to continue this conversation with me can call my number. It is 1-781-572-9109. Anytime.
And you're also on social media, correct?
I'm also on social media, of course. My Facebook name is Martin, M-A-R-T-I-N, the letter R, which is abbreviated, just R, and then Biakuleka, B-Y-A-K-U-L-E-K-A.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you for being on Black Star News Show, and we will have you again in the future. Listeners, stay strong, stay Pan-African. See you next week, and follow me at Ali Mahdi on Twitter. Thanks again once to our guests.
All right, thank you.
For WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Amara Evering with some brief news headlines. A federal judge put the execution of Lisa Montgomery on hold today. Montgomery was set to become the first woman executed by the federal government in 67 years. Two men were also scheduled to die this week. Since July, when the Trump administration revived the federal death penalty, the U.S. government has executed 10 people, which is more than any presidency since 1896. The Trump administration on Monday redesignated Cuba as a, quote, state sponsor of terrorism, hitting the country with new sanctions that could interfere with President-elect Joe Biden's promise to renew relations with the nation. The announcement has been met with widespread condemnation by authorities within Cuba, political leaders, and movements worldwide. The designation, which had been discussed for years, is one of several last-minute foreign policy moves that the Trump administration is making before Biden takes office. Removing Cuba from the blacklist had been one of former President Barack Obama's main foreign policy achievements. However, when Trump took office in 2017, he made a point of intensifying the ongoing blockade of Cuba. New England head coach Bill Belichick announced on Monday that he has declined to accept a Presidential Medal of Freedom from Trump, citing last week's deadly riot at the Capitol. Just yesterday, Trump awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Ohio Representative Jim Jordan, one of the outgoing president's fiercest GOP allies. Recently, Trump has been rewarding supporters with awards and the perks associated with serving on a host of federal advisory boards and commissions. Washington, D.C. Attorney General Carl Racine suggested that President Donald Trump and others who spoke at a January 6 rally before people stormed the U.S. Capitol could be persecuted, although Trump could not face charges until after he leaves office on January 20th. In an interview with MSNBC, the Attorney General pointed out that the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel does not permit prosecution of a sitting U.S. president. Racine noted that it would be, quote, another legal question whether Trump could face charges for his actions after he left office, and that he believed was possible. The House of Representatives is expected to vote today on a measure calling for President Donald Trump to be removed from office through the 25th Amendment in the wake of the violent siege of the U.S. Capitol last week. The resolution, brought forward by Democratic Representative Jamie Raskin of Maryland, calls on Vice President Mike Pence to immediately use his powers under Section 4 of the 25th Amendment to declare that the president is unable to successfully discharge the duties of his office. If the vice president and a majority of the cabinet agree, Pence could assume the powers of the presidency. The House is slated to begin debate on the impeachment resolution on Wednesday morning, with a possible vote late in the day. If the House votes to impeach this week, the process then moves to the Senate for a trial, possibly after the first 100 days of the new Biden administration. At least 17 Republican senators would have to join Democrats to convict Trump. According to the New York Times, a group of former administration officials and anti-Trump Republicans said they would make a $50 million commitment to Republican lawmakers who joined Democrats in supporting the impeachment of President Trump. No House Republicans supported the president's impeachment in 2019, but this year, as many as a dozen Republicans were said to be considering joining Democrats this time around. Recently, it was reported that House Republicans have decided to not formally lobby against the vote to impeach President Trump. This means that Republicans are not making moves to oppose possible impeachment, marking a subtle shift away from Trump. Weather in Washington, D.C. is now 47 degrees and still sunny. In New York City, it's 42 degrees and blue skies as well. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Amara Evering. Please stay safe.
This is Democracy Now!
What is happening right now?